Welcome to On the Beat, where we bring you a different Buffalo Bills beat reporter every week, exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome everybody into On the Beat, brought to you exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network, a show where we bring you an exclusive interview with a different Bills beat reporter or journalist every single week, and we talk about the topics swirling around our beloved Buffalo Bills. And today opened Buffalo Bills mandatory mini camp, so we're going to talk all about it. My name is Joe Miller. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired, alongside my co-host right over there, former Buffalo Bill John Fina, and you can find him on Twitter at John Fina. We are super excited that you are with us. Please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this podcast or vidcast on. We would love it if you subscribed and followed all of our content, but we're going to get right into it. We're going to get right into the topics because I know everybody's got information that they want, and we want to talk about what's going on with mandatory minicamp. Joining us right now, Frontier High School alum, former collegiate quarterback, avid golfer, and talking head on the home of the Buffalo Bills, WGR 55. I'm pleased to welcome to the program Nate Geary. Nate, my man, how are you?
I'm well. I appreciate you starting the open with my Frontier alumni status, as you know, a proud Falcon. So I appreciate it. I'm very well, you know, middle summer. Although if you looked outside in Western New York, you probably wouldn't guess that it was the middle of June. But, you know, here we are.
It's the middle of June in Arizona, fellas. You want to come out here,
Joe? I'm sure you're not.
You'd be as orange as your shirt, Joe.
I'm sure you're not dealing with any cold fronts down in Arizona.
No, only when I opened the refrigerator. Yeah.
I had to start with Frontier because my daughter was voted the defensive MVP for her flag football team. So that's really, really cool. So yes, any way I can pull the alumni. And I actually attended Frontier I went to Clover Bank and then I attended Amsdell Junior High. That's what I am before it was Frontier.
Yes.
Junior High. But yes, welcome.
They never let me play defense, by the way, Joe. So your daughter's her defensive player of the year award is safe. Luckily they wouldn't let me play defense. So
they would not allow it. John, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, I suppose. I'm happy to have Nate here on our terrific series with beat reporters. The key insights that we're getting, Nate, no pressure, have been great. So you better come up big, no pressure. But all's well out here in the desert. You know, I'm in the middle of a lot of recruiting for my son, and it's just been a blast.
Very cool. Nate, I think other than Joe Murray, so we shared a network, right? We were on Rumblings. The three of us were all on Rumblings together. And we've been on some Joe Marino podcasts, never at the same time. But this is the first time you and I, and I'm sure that you and John, all three of us at least, have been on a show together. So super excited, super thankful that you are joining us. And we'll try not to keep you too long. So Bills minicamp opened today, Tuesday. I errantly reported on Sunday when I did the show that it was opening on Monday. So I was wrong. It actually opened today. And I put out a little thing on Twitter about that. But the news, there are two big stories for the day, actually probably three. Number one, Rasul Douglas did show up. He was in attendance today, which I pretty much assumed he would. He didn't attend OTAs last year with the Packers and then showed up for minicamp. The only member that was not in attendance was Christian Benford, who had an excused absence. But the big stories for today are Matt Milano participating in individual drills, and then Khalil Shakir, it was reported, was injured early in practice at 7-on-7. So I guess first things first, probably the most important thing, Shakir. Have you heard anything at all at this point about the Shakir injury?
It was being labeled a lower body injury by everyone that was in attendance today. He went down. It was early in practice, stayed on the sidelines with the trainers before going in to the locker room. So I'm sure we'll hear more over the next couple of days. I was listening to Sean McDermott's press conference on my way to lunch this afternoon, so I got to hear that in its entirety. And, you know, Sean mentioned them having to bring some extra bodies in on a tryout basis because of some of the injuries at the running back position, specifically with Ray Davis and Ty Johnson both not participating with injury, and at the linebacker position as well with Matt Milano on a limited basis, and, you know, some of the other pieces that they've got missing. So they're a little banged up right now, but I guess this is, if you're going to be banged up, it's the time now with the next couple of weeks and kind of month ahead to get right for the start of training camp.
Super cool. Yep. And then I guess second would be Matt Milano, obviously returning, which you just said as well. Super excited. I wasn't necessarily sure. I don't think any of us were when he was going to be even getting to this position as far as being limited in practice. But what does it mean to this team, in your opinion, just seeing Milano out there, like participating, helmet on, pushing the sled, doing individual things? What does that do to just from a jumpstart standpoint for this team?
Yeah, well, I mean, Brandon Bean, voluntary minicamp started, mentioned that he wasn't sure Milano was going to participate until the start of training camp. So Getting him a month early, even in a limited basis, I think is a shot to the arm, like you mentioned. Listen, I think he proved what he proved last year. Him and Daquan Jones both proved this, that I think in different ways, they're both sort of the spark plug of the defense. Right now, is he your most veteran guy on the defensive side of the football that has been in the organization the longest and played here the longest? But I think what you found last year is when Daquan Jones is healthy and you have two healthy linebackers in Terrell Bernard and obviously Matt Milano, what those two are able to do succinctly with how quickly both of those guys read and react, they're similar in how quickly they're able to get downhill. I think where Milano has really proven to be an all-pro status level player to me is in pass coverage. And I think they missed that a lot last year. I can tell you they certainly missed that against Travis Kelce in the AFC divisional round game against the Chiefs. And, you know, I think for me, as great as it is to have Matt Milano back, I think it's equally great to have Terrell Bernard back in a healthy manner as well. I think together, you know, they probably won't be talked about as one of the league's best duos at the linebacker position. But I think by midseason, if both are healthy, I think that's where the conversation will start to go anyway. So, yeah, it's great to have Milano back. I know a lot of people were concerned, would there be long-term ramifications? We don't really know what the injury was. And I think some of that maybe unknown about the injury is what I think has driven a lot of the anxiety around when he'll be back, when he'll be 100%, when he'll be participating. But I get the sense that, and just from the words of Sean McDermott talking about him, and I think I heard Matty Glab too talk about how they were asking some of the players like any upcoming trips, and Milano was like, no, all business, I'll be here getting ready for the start of training camp. I think he's a guy that's locked in, and you know, he's going to have a C on his chest this year, and I think he's going to be a big part of this leadership council and the, you know, kind of importance of on-field play as well for this team and this defense moving forward.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I looked at the film, and it's one thing to move through a few bags and pop the sled a little bit, but you got to really pay attention to the bend and the way they utilize their body, and I think he looks terrific. So there's no question that the leadership he brings, the experience he brings, mentoring the younger guys is going to be great value. You know, quiet warrior that he is, no surprise that he's not going anywhere, right? I mean, countdown to training camp is now pretty quick. And him with both Williams and Bernard, I think is, you know, I think we have, it looks like depth issues, but I don't think it's a talent issue, right? So I think it's only depth and experience from the younger guys. But by and large, I do feel like that linebacker position feels better than it did at some points last year, especially, you know, with Matt Milano coming back.
Yeah. I'm not sure a lot of teams would have been able to get through the injuries the Bills had at the linebacker position last year. And I think to me, you know, I look at how they've sort of replaced some of the things they've lost really since Tremaine Edmonds. And obviously they lose Dotson this offseason, who Dotson was a guy I was very concerned about getting in that elevated role. I thought he played great. I mean, he really turned that into a contract with Seattle, whether or not he's a starter in Seattle's kind of a secondary conversation, but he played well enough to be, I think, considered a mid-level starter in the NFL. And for a guy to walk into a situation where he's never really played meaningful snaps in a starting role, walk into a defense that was, you know, top five in scoring defense and feel like he didn't really miss a major beat. Most teams can't overcome losing their top two linebackers going into the playoffs. Most teams can't really afford to lose their top three, which is what happened to the Bills when Dotson went down with injury last year. And I think they really the Bills tend to, and Brandon Bean talks about this a lot every offseason, he talks about you tend to take a lot from the last game of the season as how you build forward. And I think the signing of Nick Morrow, who is starting snaps in the league, played for Philadelphia last year, started a number of games in the league. I think they like Baylen Spector a lot. And I think Baylen Spector would have played more had he not been dealing with that nagging hamstring injury towards the end of last season as well. He's going to be a special teams guy that I think that has a role on this team. Obviously, they draft the kid. Listen, McDermott can't say his name. I can't pronounce his name. I'm not going to attempt it either. We'll call him Eddie for Eddie, the sake of conversation. From Washington. I think that they have made sure that if they sustain a number of injuries at the linebacker position, that it's one they'll have experience. And I think the name everyone is starting to really talk about more is Dorian Williams. Now injured, isn't participating in mandatory minicamp, but I think a year of experience under his belt, he is of the same kin as a Matt Milano and a Terrell Dotson, or a Terrell Bernard, I should say, as a quick reactor downfield, very quick to read and react, which is, you know, at this point in the league, the Brian Urlachers and these big bruising middle linebackers that are, you know, taking on blocks from interior offensive linemen. At this point in the NFL, we're seeing that position get smaller and smaller. There was a point where, you know, Shaq Leonard from Indianapolis being at 210, 215 was, you know, not the norm. Now I think the norm at the position is the body types of a Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard. So I think in how the league is going, the Bills have really built their style of play at the middle linebacker position out of where the league is going, which is always good to see. Yeah. And Sean McDermott's always ahead of trends defensively.
I think so, it's Elofocio. Isn't that how it's pronounced or something like that? Elofocio. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to stay on the defense for a second and address something that, you know, given the number of injuries, player loss, and things of that nature that the defense has suffered, I think Babich is really the guy here who has to drive the psychological health of the defense, right? Mm. You know, there's so much belief. And if you don't manage it from the top down, then sometimes players drift. You know, doubt grows, it creeps. So, you know, to me, that next man up kind of concept is really delivered from the top down. Now, of course, I want everybody to stay healthy, but it's the NFL 17 game season. The reality of that is bumps and bruises will come. But how can Babich psychologically backbone this group so that they're able to get up, believe in the game plan every week and come out and deliver? You know, that's outside of the physical nature of the game. That true leadership from coaching and the captains of the defense have to take control, right? It goes back to the old Bull Durham, right? If you think you're pitching great because you're wearing women's underwear, then you are, right? So you got to get to that level of belief, regardless of the physical characteristics that are beneath it.
Well, I think, you know, with Babich becomes, I think, a unique perspective, right? I mean, coaching the linebackers and then coaching, I think he coached defensive backs. Well, he's really been throughout this organization, a coach that has sort of risen through the ranks, much like you would expect a, you know, higher draft pick, or I should say a lower draft pick, right? A guy that's a Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, right? Like these guys that they walk in and it's all about what you're going to earn from there. And I think he sort of personifies a lot of what this roster is defensively. You know, Rasul Douglas isn't, you know, a first round pick. Milano, fifth round pick. Bernard, fourth round pick. This isn't necessarily really the roster at large has been built a lot in that, right? Which is these guys that have worked for what they have in the league. And I think the perspective, and I loved what Bobby Babich said, I think it was last week when he was speaking, just about the idea of trust, right? And overloading these rookies and young players early so that they fail and they're not afraid to fail. And by the time they get on the field and they get in these positions, listen, like, I think Dorian Williams had a fail early last season. I think they wanted Dorian Williams to be out there in an every down role when Matt Milano went out. But it was clear it was a lot for him and he did fail early. But I think you started to see the strides he was making both in a cerebral way, understanding and being able to process at the NFL speed level, and then turning an understanding of what he's seeing and what offenses are doing at a processing level and then applying that to the reaction. I can't imagine how difficult it is going from college football to the pros at the speed in which the game is played now and the sophistication of the game. is played at now. This isn't, Wham. This isn't I formation power run down your throat. Mm-hmm. There's sophistication and route concepts and where these linebackers are supposed to be positioning wise, the communication and really the complexity of how defenses are throwing zone coverage at teams now. So with all of that, you kind of have to understand and be able to process quickly and then take it from, hey, here's what I'm seeing to here's how I react to this look or to this play. So, and then it's not even the conversation about, weaponizing leverage. Right. And now you're talking about all these things. If anyone's going to do a good job of comparing this stuff to golf, it's going to be me. There are so many things you have to think about in your golf swing to be successful. And the same goes for a position like linebacker, which I think in my experience and thinking of where the game is now, that's your real quarterback of the defense. I think a lot of people were concerned and some weren't. I was losing Tremaine Edmonds because of how, were there sort of flaws in his game? Sure. But I think what he was able to do pre and post snap, getting guys in position, getting to checks on time and understanding what Sean McDermott wants to do defensively at the time, Leslie Frazier, I think was a super important part of the game. And now the fact that Terrell Bernard was able to year two walk in, A, not miss a beat, B, bring more consistency to the position. It speaks a lot to his position coach, but I think also speaks a lot to how this team is preparing rookies early and allowing them to fail and not sort of ruin their development.
Yeah, super good. Talking with Nate Geary from WGR 55, a lot of media types have labeled this season a working rebuild. The Buffalo Bills have jettisoned, 5 captains and a lot of talent from this team. Jerry Ostrowski, a member of the Overreaction Sports Network, he calls it a soft rebuild. How would you label the current state of the Buffalo Bills? And I have a follow-up that kind of goes along with that. But where do you see this team right now?
Oh, it's a good question. I hate being the moderate of this whole thing, but I feel very in the middle between the people that are saying this is a Bills team that's lost too much and now is putting a lot on their quarterback. And I probably sit on the other side or at least in the middle of towards the people of, well, the Bills got better. I think that this is a conversation that requires a little bit of deeper thinking on both of those angles. I think both can have levels of being correct. And I also think you probably find yourself somewhere in the middle here. I think that they're taking, when you talk about being ahead of trends, I do think Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have been very good at understanding where the league is turning. I think you're seeing huge contracts being paid out to the wide receiver position. People that were predicting the receiver position was going to, fall back, or these guys aren't going to see these $30, $35 million, $40 million. Who knows where it goes when Jamar Chase and, some of these other guys, Brandon Ayuk, get paid. But I'll tell you, the Bills decided that they were going to go the same route that the Kansas City Chiefs did. Now, they paid Stephon Diggs, so they're sort of dealing with the ramifications of paying him and then letting him go a year later. But I think that they're going to go the same route that Kansas City did, is have a tight end that can be a mismatch nightmare, build your offense around forcing defenses to figure out how they're going to guard you over the middle of the field, and have the ability of your quarterback to extend plays better than anybody in the league, build a sustainable running game, which I think people don't talk a lot about with the Kansas City Chiefs, is how sustainable and physical their run game has become with Isaiah Pacheco. And I think the Bills are looking to build something very similar to that. And I think if you want to talk about the Poyers and the Hydes, of course, those are guys to me that they're going to miss, especially from a leadership perspective and an understanding the game, getting people in the right positions. But I mean, they were gluing it together last year to keep Poyer on the field. Yeah. And I have a lot of respect for Poyer and his game and the career he's built for himself. But it reminded me a little bit of what it looked like towards the end for Lawyer Malloy. And we got that great season out of Malloy after he got cut by the Patriots. But what was Bill Belichick known for when he was really in his prime, which was getting got rid of guys a year, right? The year before they really hit that cliff. And I think we saw both Poyer and Hyde hit that cliff. I mean, it was basically every time I watched, Micah Hyde get in for a tackle, I'm just thinking to myself, God, is this the hit, And same. I mean, there was like 4 or 5 stingers that he dealt with. And so I think that they're faster. I think that they're more athletic at the safety position. I think that they've added strong depth in the interior part of the defensive line that they did not have last year. I do worry about what they're going to do with pass rush. The vacated sack numbers that you're going to get from, Leonard Floyd leaving, who was their Now you can have complaints about when and where he showed up, and obviously it was had disappointing playoff run, but they're certainly asking a lot from AJ Epenesa and yep. Gregory Rousseau into taking steps and frankly hoping that Von Miller can find a happy median between the guy he was before the injury and who he was last year. So for a lack of being political in this, I'm going to take the moderate route that it, I guess nothing would really surprise me this year. Mm. I do tend to believe that anytime you have a quarterback like Josh Allen, like Patrick Mahomes, that you have a fighting chance regardless of who lines up on the outside. As long as they can maintain the level of protection and consistency they had up front, I do have some question marks about Connor McGovern moving to center and what that means for the left guard position. Is that David Edwards long term? Is that Lael Collins? I don't know what that looks like. I think they're building a more and the Van Pan Granger selection also speaks to this a little bit. And John, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. The type, the archetype of player that this offensive line sort of has progressed to with Osiris Torrance pick last year is these bigger, they may not have those big long arms that you love, especially on the interior offensive line. Van Pran Granger fell in the draft, I think, because of some of those traits. But these are downhill, road grading, physical, you know, body types in the interior of this offensive line. And I think a lot of that speaks to how they're going to sort of evolve under Joe Brady as offensive coordinator. So I apologize for my my politician response of kind of going everywhere with this, but I'm here to tell you, I think they're going to walk off the bus and be a 10-win team. It would surprise me if they're less than that. It might surprise me if they're more, but if Khalil Shakir and you know Curtis Samuel can emulate what they got from Diggs in the first half of last year, and you see the step up from Kincaid, if they ended up at 3 or 4 on in terms of you know offensive points per game, and they lean into you know having James Cook be a future point of this offense, I don't think they really should miss the beat. I think a lot of the national media and people are looking at, do I think they'll miss Mitch Morse? I do. Yeah. How much they miss everybody else, I think might be surprising to some people that don't watch the Bills on a you know down by down basis.
John, do you want to take that question just from Nate in regards to the offensive linemen?
Yeah, you know, having two boys that have gone through recruiting and, you know, metrics and analytics and things of that nature. At the guard position, you know, you could talk about length all you want, but it's all about confidence and timing, right? Everyone knows you are not going to play football in the NFL unless you can pass protect. That's it. You're not playing O-line unless you can pass protect, right? The concept of pass protection is really all about confidence. I know that I have to get my hands on you faster than you get your hands on me. I have to have the right hand placement, and it's got to be there before you get moving because these D tackles are just enormous. They're fast. They're powerful. So I don't, you know, a guy comes up an inch short or 2 inches short really doesn't mean a lot to me. It's the mindset of I got to have a fight in a phone booth. I did it last night. Our high school offensive line, we won the big man competition against, you know, 10 other schools from Phoenix and Tucson. And every time before every rep on the guards and center, I'd sell the same thing. Fight in a phone booth, guy that lands the first blow wins. And that's it. So you can measure arms all you want, but you got to measure, you got to measure mentality. You got to measure nasty, and you got to measure that psychological commitment to putting your hand out like this and not like that and not like this bear hugging. You know, you've got to just, you got to sell out. So if they have the right mindset, I think you're right. The size is there, you know, the quality of the guys is there. How the pieces now fit together is really what will make the difference.
I also too, if I just a quick insertion here is I think that they scout the position very well. I think they're very good at identifying guys that like you hear Brandon Bean talk about when he saw Keon Coleman run, right? Like they want these guys to run a 10th of a second slower than they're expected to and see that drop because they've done the work on the scouting perspective and how they feel that fit is. And with a Van Pan Granger to hear the Eric Woods and to hear some of the scouting profiles. I mean, this is a guy that's used to playing against, you know, day one, day two picks in the SEC. And Connor McGovern, I thought was not necessarily a pleasant surprise, but I thought he really solidified a position that had been a revolving door. And obviously Osiris Torrance as well.
I mean, yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I thought Osiris Torrance had a great rookie year.
We lost your audio, Nate.
Anyway, dovetailing on that, as Joe likes to hear me say, dovetail. Hear me,
guys? Yeah, we got you back. Yep.
We got you back.
Okay, sorry. Got a call.
It was me saying, don't take the call.
Don't take it.
So don't take the call.
When you talk about being a moderate, as far as just the outlook of the Buffalo Bills for this year, and whether it's a rebuilding phase, a soft rebuild, or just kind of retooling or whatever, where do you feel quickly, where do you feel the most pressure is at? Is it on the offense or is it on the defense?
I think it's on the offense, and largely because I think the defense is going to be better because they're going to have more athleticism on the back end. You're going to get your linebackers back. But I think the reason the pressure will probably always be on the offense is when you have Josh Allen in his prime, that there's this inherent pressure that will exist for getting the most out of an offense, getting the most out of your team when you've got a quarterback like Josh in his prime. So I think there's pressure on a new play caller to not deviate from what has made Josh great, but also find a more sustainable way for them. Like, to me, when things got tough last year, it went back to Josh do everything. Yeah. And the intent to start the season was we need to take some of these things off of Josh's plate too. Now we're in this must win every game situation to find our way into back into the playoffs at the end of the year. And so what we're sort of identifying ourselves is they're at their best when Josh is asked to do everything.
Right.
That is a burden for Joe Brady to remove from this offense. And I think you saw it with the selection of Ray Davis, a more physical, I think maybe a runner that's a little bit better built for zone, where I think you looked last year at James Cook. I wouldn't say he's the most proficient reader of defenses and understanding leverage. He got better as the year went on, and definitely better from his rookie season. But I think this is going to be a run first offense. And the question is, do you have the pieces to hit the plays down the field when they present themselves? Last year, Josh was an inefficient quarterback down the field. And whether that was just juicing the ball too far on missing Stephon Diggs in a couple of plays, I think we're talking about a dramatically different season for Stephon Diggs last year if he doesn't overthrow Diggs on three or four occasions where he's just running wide open.
Yeah, I agree 100% on that. You talked briefly, last question, then I'm going to jump topics on you real quick for the last couple minutes of the show, or for the last couple minutes that we have you. You talked pass rushers and concern there. We did a show a week ago just about the cap money that the Bills got June 1st, and obviously they don't have a ton of money, but they've got a little bit of slush there, and we've seen Brandon Bean go out and get guys off of the couch or like some cheap, like gotta-prove-it dudes. Couple guys that are out there, Yannick Ngakoue. One that is really interesting to me is Carl Lawson, who went from the Bengals, signed a huge deal with the Jets, and then just couldn't stay on the field. So they finally cut ties with him. And then obviously Shaq Lawson. Do you bring back like the guy that you know, right? So just real quick, just thoughts on that. Do the Bills go out and make a move at defensive end, at edge, for somebody like one of those three guys?
I think they'd have to sustain an injury during training camp or in the next couple of days at the defensive end position that makes them think it's a position of need for them, or they get a couple of days into training camp and they don't see the juice in Vaughn. It's not carrying over from some of the burst that it looked like we heard a lot of beat reporters talk about was at least showing that it had returned. I think the guy that I'm most interested in is a Solomon kid from Troy. I mean, he is for everything you watch from him at Troy, it was a surprise to see him fall as far as he did. He doesn't, again, what we were just talking about with John on the offensive line, he doesn't have that size. He doesn't have that arm span. But sometimes what guys have that I think Solomon possesses is that motor, that consistent, I'm not going to give up on a play. That it's hard to teach that. I think you'd rather have that as the base and you can teach some of the other fundamental stuff, the ways to overcome having shorter arms and so on and so forth. But I would be surprised if that's the position they address with the money that they have. I also think that it would not surprise me at all if they walked into training camp with the 9.5 or almost 10 million in cap space going into the season, because I'm sure Brandon Bean would love an offseason where he gets to carry over $7, 8, 9 million into the cap next year. Yeah, we would all love that, right? So, let's hope that Khalil Shakir's injury is just a contusion. He got a Charlie horse or something. But I think that's a break glass in case of emergency slush fund. And for me, it would have to go pretty wrong and early on in training camp, or a big injury leading up into training camp for, I think, them to go out and address the defensive end position. They say what you will, you know, they go out and sign Smoot. They signed the Tuhill, the other guy from Washington that they signed. They've got bodies. Now, I don't think any of them are game breakers, but I think they're really expecting AJ Epenesa to flash more of what he showed in small spurts in a more consistent manner this year with more reps. And I also think Greg Rousseau is one of the most efficient edge players. He's, in my estimation, a top five edge setter in terms of the run game. But he's been very productive and efficient as a pass rusher and pass rush win rate with a low, you know, percentage of snaps. That snap count's got to go up this year.
Oh, don't talk to Joe about that. I was just saying, Tuhill and Smoot are there just to keep the rotation going, so that's Joe can sit on his couch and scream at the TV.
John knows me well. Last quick topic for you, and then we'll get you out of here. Thank you so much, Nate, for being a part of the show. So you are legendary when it comes to trolling the other AFC East teams, specifically Dolphins, the Dolphins fans. So just real quick, I'm going to paint a small picture for you. AFC East thoughts and expectations, the Jets. The big story there is that both Aaron Rodgers and Hassan Reddick did not report to mandatory minicamp. Reddick wants a new contract. And Aaron, according to Saleh, he's doing something that he really wanted to do. And it's an excuse. The Jets are just going to do Jet things. They got the best roster, in my opinion, in the East, but this is just what they do. You got the Dolphins, who worry me less than the Jets, provided their quarterback stays healthy. That offense is elite, but the defense has holes all over it. And the Patriots are drafting top five, in my opinion, in 2025. But just real quick, last thing for you, thoughts on the AFC East, where everybody finishes.
Man, Robert Saleh, I'm just begging you to get up on that podium today and lie. Say anything other than it wasn't an unexcused absence, and that he's subject to a fine. Because now what you're doing is you're going to set a precedent that if you let this one go with Aaron Rodgers, they have since the beginning let Aaron Rodgers play them like a fiddle. And I mean, how can you blame them that it is the most inept franchise in the NFL for the past two decades and maybe longer, really since Joe Namath? I think to me, Joe Douglas doesn't wear enough criticism. I mean, they walked and backdoored into a receiver like Garrett Wilson, who they've not been able to really elevate into the elite role I think he's capable of playing at. I mean, they go out and they sign, Alan Lazard to a ridiculous contract because he's Rodgers' guy. And the buttons that Rodgers is able to push on that franchise, and almost no other franchise would let the stuff go that the Jets do, is because they're just so desperate for even a sliver of success. So, the Jets are – listen – I think it's laughable that people have them in the Super Bowl conversation. It will fall apart, whether it's due to injury, whether it's due to Rodgers pulling out last second to be, you know, Trump's VP or something. I just can't imagine that anything is going to go smoothly over there. And I loved your point about the Dolphins, which I think a lot gets made about the veterans that the Bills lost. But the guys that the Bills lost were all sort of at the end of the – sort of the end of the road in their careers, they should be, if not better, at the very worst, they're the same. Christian Wilkins went out and got, you know, historic defensive tackle money. Robert Hunt, historic right guard money. They lost key contributors. And Jalen Ramsey's a year older. Xavier Howard, you know, he was kind of towards the end of his rope as well. And obviously I don't see him playing very much football in the not so distant future with some of the reports of the off the field stuff that he's dealing with now. David Long was like their big free agent get last year. And I don't know, he was all right at middle linebacker for them. They go out and they get Brooks, the kid from Seattle that they let walk, and they brought Dotson in, and all of a sudden they've got this, you know, huge, unbelievable duo at the middle linebacker position. I don't know. They've got their best two players coming off of significant injuries, one of which, with when you're talking about Bradley Chubb, the second ACL injury. And you're talking about Phillips, who's had the list of injuries that kid has sustained. But by the way, he'll be in a contract year. they want to, I think it was so easy to blame Vic Fangio for everything, but he's a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator. So if you want to, if all those players didn't want to play for Vic Fangio, I think that it's way more of a, maybe they should look in the mirror thing than what it's wrong with Vic Fangio. So, I would tell you, I feel better about the Bills' chances winning the division this year than I did last year.
Wow.
No, wow. See, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think you look at the Patriots, they are who they are right now. You look at the Jets, and despite what Joe says about loving the roster, you know, it seems like they want to figure out a way to blow it, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think Saleh has control of that team. Aaron Rodgers might have control of that team, but I mean, I just saw a couple of videos myself, and I thought, well, that thing don't look right.
No, it doesn't.
And I agree with
John,
you.
You mean that Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to play in November last year if they were still in the playoff race?
Yeah, right. And then you look at the Dolphins, and I think to myself, wow, they really stacked it up on offense. They beat Denver, you know, 700-1, but they lost on defense, I think, an irretrievable amount. Yeah. I think they're just behind the eight ball, and you can track meet everybody, but it's going to take being perfect. And I just don't think that the guy at quarterback is good enough to make it all perfect.
Robert Hunt and Connor Williams are two humongous losses. And if you, John, if you watch Tua Tagovailoa, he is an elite processor in that first read. He will get rid of the ball on time, accurately in that first read. The knock on him is, can he get to the second, to the third, to the fourth read in his progressions? And we still have not seen him do that consistently and successfully. And especially if he gets pressure up the middle, he does not have the ability, the arm strength, to extend plays to the outside like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson do. So now, an area where you feel like you should be fortifying and solidifying for him and making sure you have elite level interior protection for him so that when he gets the ball and he gets to the top of that drop, the ball can come out. If he's got pressure in his face, I don't know. Good luck. Good luck.
Super.
And I'm hoping Dwayne Carter and Daquan Jones and Ed Oliver are those guys right in the face.
Indeed. Yep.
We got to get you out of here, Nate. Super good having you on the program. Appreciate it. We want to rotate and kind of roll the journalists and the beat reporters and stuff like that inside of the Bills Media kind of like club. So we'd love to have you back on if you're willing. Thank you.
Anytime, man.
Yeah, appreciate you being on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been tuned into On the Beat on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. For me, for John, for Jerry, for Nate, go Bills.
Go Bills.
Go Bills. Go Bills.